Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast. I'm your host today, Kevin Brown, with Inside Lacrosse here. Thanks for coming back to us on wherever you get your podcast. We got a special one today, guys. We got two special guests, one that you're very familiar with if you've been a listener of the PLL Happy Hour Podcast, and another who, of course, you're going to be familiar with if you're a fan of lacrosse at all. That is the one and only Rob Pennell and Kyle Devitt. Guys, how are we doing?
I think it's the one and only Kyle Devitt as well.
I was confused who was who in your intro. I'm not going to lie.
I kept you on your toes a little bit.
Love it.
It was good.
Doing great.
Rob, it's been a pretty awesome week for you to get your second win, part of the Redwoods. Major reason we wanted to have you on, and I think a good reason to have Kyle on here, is because of the tweet you sent out after that game and 10 seasons of playing pro lacrosse. You felt like this is I forget how you worded it, but it was one of the most rewarding wins in front of a great crowd. Just explain what was going on through your mind.
Yeah, it was just a great lacrosse game. I think I just remember throughout times of the game, just after certain sequences, thinking to myself, like, wow, this is just awesome lacrosse right now. Back and forth action. And, there were a couple sequences where there was transition and Jack Kelly would make a save and he would throw an outlet pass and we'd be in transition. And, you know, I remember Jack and Cannon made a save on Glazner on the doorstep, cross crease. And then it went back up the other way. And it was just great lacrosse, I think, for the entire game. Goalies played well. You know, it was a high scoring game, but both goalies were above 50% save percentage, which means there was a lot of shots, a lot of action. We did a better job in transition. The Redwoods, from that perspective, there was good defense. There was good plays. There were two pointers. There was long pole scoring goals. It just felt like a fun game. And obviously coming out on the right side of it probably makes me feel more that way. But I do remember, standing there in the fourth quarter, I think at one point watching the Atlas on offense, and maybe it was 14-14 or whatever it was. Just thinking it was really fun game, and yet the crowd was sold out and they were going crazy after every play, and even plays that weren't goals, they were going nuts, and it was great energy, and obviously a big win for us, so that was nice as well.
Yeah, I think for me, watching you specifically with this Redwoods team, knowing how you used to play with the Lizards back in the MLL, and how many times you saw the ball per game, the adjustment was probably a little bit different for you. And also, you're a kind of player that doesn't, in regular lacrosse, you move the ball through X, right? Like every coach yells that, and you're an X guy. And I think in PLL, a lot of it is top down, and yep, the X guy is kind of got a different role. How has that adjustment been for you specifically this year?
It's been fine. I do agree with you, Kyle. I think, Paul Carcaterra talks about, records and stuff and how attackmen, of course, they're going to have the record. I think pro lacrosse is a very midfield oriented game. And, I took a 2-pointer last game, and it's my one attempt of the season, probably with 2-pointers. So, it definitely is a top down game, and I'm okay with it. At this point in my career, I don't really care about the goals and assists anymore or all that stuff. I just want to win games and try and win a championship. And that was very clear as to what my role is as the quarterback behind the goal. But, that doesn't mean he doesn't want me to feel like I have to make a play every time the ball is on the offensive end, and that we have plenty of talent out there to move the ball. And, I think by me buying into that has got other guys to buy into that. We won this past weekend, and I haven't really taken a lot of shots this year. When I looked at
that was my next question and observation, but yes.
Yeah. So I was going into it, cause I haven't taken a lot of shots this year. And, I kind of evaluated everything at the All-Star break and looked at that and, thought maybe I have to be aggressive. Maybe that's going to put pressure on the defense as well. And, when I take shots, I, I, I shoot and I don't, it's, I like to think it's either going to go in the goal or I miss wide, you know, I'm just missing and we're backing it up and I'm not losing possession on my shots that much. But I did want to shoot more. And maybe this game was a reminder of why I haven't been shooting more, shooting 1 for 8. So, it was, but I did feel good and I felt a little bit like my old self again. And I don't know if that helped in the win and the defense was more worried about me behind there and it opened other guys up. I don't know, but, I did feel, comfortable again, but you know, whatever is needed of me at this point as the X guy is what I want to do. And, you know, we're pretty close as an offensive group and we communicate through things. So I'm cool with it. Whatever, you know, being the quarterback back there, being the exchange guy, Dodge, moving to that backside, to that midi to Dodge. You know, I know I get my opportunities off the end line, you know, every now and then.
Watching the game, Atlas on the other side, 14-14 in that fourth quarter, is it kind of, now that you've played pro lacrosse for so long, just how much has your just appreciation for kind of this next group of talent been? And you know, we had Brendan Nichtern on the podcast last week. He's a guy who looked up to you. Just how cool is it to have guys in the league that are like really good growing up and emulating it?
It makes me feel old, but it's awesome. I mean, these guys they're on a different level of talent than I am and a lot of us older guys. They just have the stick in their hand for, you know, from when they were so young and they play year round. You know, growing up, I played multiple sports and put the lacrosse stick down and just what these kids can do from a just stick skill standpoint and behind the backs and around the worlds. And, you know, they don't even have to think about it. It just happens naturally. And, you know, watching guys like Nichtern and Chris Gray and Jeff Teat does something that no one can ever do, you know, once a game. So it's awesome. And I think it's exciting for me to see these guys out there and know that professional lacrosse is in good hands, guys with great talent. And, you know, I said it during the All-Star game, they're not just incredibly talented kids. They're also good kids. You know, they're very humble and respectful and appreciative of what they have and kind of the league and respectful of everybody above, you know, above them. And, you know, the All-Star game, I like to think I'm a kid, but they're all like, you know, looking at you for what to talk to and what to do. But no, it's awesome and it's exciting. And I find myself watching sometimes during the game rather than being in the game because they're so good.
Well, the flip side, sorry to interrupt, Kyle, just I know you said go back and forth here. I knew this was going to happen that I'll have follow-ups, but like the flip side of that is literally younger players that you see yourself like, all right, I can't believe he just did that. Let me try to take that and put it into parts of my game.
Yeah, I think some of it. I would be lying if I said when I shoot around during the week, I don't try and shoot like Jeff Teat when he like drops his head and shoots it high and work on some of those things or some of the twisters and stuff. But at the same time, you know, I really haven't changed my game much over the years. And it works for me. It's been working for me. And, you know, I've had success, so I don't want to try and change it up too much. I'm on the kind of right. End of my career here, but it's been good. And, but I do try some of it. It's just a matter of me being confident enough to try it in the game.
You think you can pull off that Lyle twister?
The one that he falling down. Yeah. I feel like that was just another play for Lyle though. You know, I feel like he's done that 1,000 times probably, right? Falling down. He shoots it like that a lot. The fact that he was falling made it cooler, I guess. You know, I've shot some twisters before, but, you know, the way I think about it is like, I go righty and I go lefty a lot. You know, Lyle doesn't put the stick in his left hand that much. So, he's able to do that, you know, to have it from the left side of his body. So it's all relative. It's all, you know, what you're used to doing. And, but yeah, I think it's, you know, you're always trying to evolve any way you can.
Yeah. Speaking of, getting older, one of the things I've noticed watching this year and in the off season too, the old guard of guys with lots of MLL experience is gone. Like a lot of them retired in the off season. Like guys that you thought maybe had 1 or 2 years didn't come back. I never really thought that you would do that yet. I don't think you're there yet, and I don't think you think that either. But how do you think that's affected, not like overall play, but maybe overall vibe of teams and travel? I know everybody kind of travels together now, but how is that manifested for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel that, you know, a lot of guys that I've played with, and you know, that that gif, the John Travolta one, where he's in the room and he's just like looking around. I don't know if you know it. That's yeah. That's what I feel like some weekends, where I like get to like All-Star weekend, I was like, all right, where is everybody? You know, where's the guys that are used to being here? And it was a lot of guys that were in their first or second game, and but it's different, but it's cool. You know, it's kind of, you kind of see the changing of where it was and what it's going to be. I mean, the list of guys that retired this offseason was such an incredible list of USA guys and pros that had so much success, but were staples of the league and of teams for so long. So to not have them around definitely changes the dynamic, but you are seeing a lot of teams having success with a lot of these younger guys. And, you know, I think that just speaks to the volume of talent that's out there.
You mentioned, let me follow that real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
What the younger players, when you talk to them, what do they ask you? And what do they make fun of you about if they do? Because I feel like you just referenced the meme, like that's like very, very cyclical. How is your interaction with the younger guys? Because, you know, like Kevin said, they all grew up, you know, trying to emulate you in particular.
Yeah, they are quiet. You know, I will say that they're not that talkative, where they come out of their shell and are asking too many questions or stuff. More so, they just make you feel old when you say, like, oh, have you ever seen this movie or heard this? And they're like, no, like, what are you talking about? Or you start talking about like the MLL days, or like, and you realize that, you know, you're 10 years older than them, and they have no idea what you're talking about. So, the Redwoods, actually, you know, we're not that young of a team. From a rookie's perspective, too. You know, we have Nakai and Joe Robertson. But, you know, they're both pretty quiet and to themselves. And Joe's one of the chillest, like, most laid-back guys ever. But, so, yeah, I don't really – we just kind of – when we talk, it's just normal. And they don't ask too many questions. And, like, even at the All-Star game, you know, Nick Turner's on my team and Logan Wisnowskis. And they, a lot of times they just kind of, like, sit and stare. And it's just like, you know, you're just kind of like, I'm creating the conversation with them and trying to talk to them and see what's up and whatnot. You know, so
it's like stargazing at you. Like,
yeah, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I don't know if they're just like, don't want to talk to me, or they don't know what to say.
It sounds like me at every party. Yeah. Are you guys talking to me? No? All right, cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned like the guys in the changing of guard. You're part of the tryout invitational list, to the 50 going in September. Just how much is a part of your motivation to keep going, to keep representing the USA at the 23 games and beyond?
It's a big part of it. You know, obviously I want to win a PLL championship. So that's my motivation. But to be on another world team, try and be on the third, be on my third team, and being 1-1, it'd be nice to try and make the team and be 2-1 if we can, you know, win a gold medal. So that's definitely in my mind and something that's at the top of my list right now. And kind of have that as, you know, this season, and that is what I'm looking towards next. And I haven't really thought too much about playing or how much longer I want to play after that, and if I'm even going to play after that. I'm just grateful the coaching staff gave me an opportunity after missing tryouts this summer with my hamstring to come and try out in the fall and give it a shot. And I'd like to be the old guy on the team, and, you know, one of the veterans that's been there before and kind of knows what it takes to play in the world games and get through 2 weeks of competition and play against Canada. So it'd be nice to be there. I wouldn't mind caddying for some of these younger guys and just showing them the way and, you know, holding their sticks on the sideline. But, you know, we'll see what happens. It's going to be extremely competitive to make that team, but it's definitely one of, if not the top thing at the top of my list right now.
Like you we're turning this into a testimonial for you, but which is not what I want to do. But there's a high school player entering Syracuse that you grew up basically, you know, tutoring in your way of playing lacrosse, and Joey Spallina. And yeah. I've talked to him a bunch of times, and he, you know, cites you as like his greatest influence, and the way he plays, he has your GLE fade to feed. He has the shoulder drop. He does the turn and run when he shoots. He, like, if you closed your eyes and put you guys in silhouettes when you came back, it'd be hard to differentiate other than like maybe a little bit of the body type. The movement is so similar. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that, you know, has developed in your relationship with him and obviously his dad?
Yeah. And listen, I'm sure Joey is going to, as he gets bigger and faster and stronger, you know, he might have a body type like me. I don't know. He's an incredibly hard worker to start, and he loves lacrosse. So from the time I started on the Lizards, he was always at every practice. He had his stick in his hand. He was watching us. He was throwing it around. He probably had a better behind the back pass than me at 5 years old. You know, he was incredible. And I think I even remember, you know, during games, he'd be on our sidelines during every game, and he'd be giving us water and talking to us, and he would be like smiling, you know, he'd be coming off the field. And, you know, a few, even instances where I would do like a move and I would like take advantage of a defender, or like just take him one way just to come back the other way. And, you know, Joe would come up to me and he'd be like, yo, yeah, Joey and I were just talking about what you did there. Like, that was crazy. Like, why'd you do it? You know, you're here and you took him this way just so you can come back and have more angle this way. And I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I should show Joey that. And I'm sure the amount of film that Joe watched when he was coaching the Lizards, that Joey was right there with him. So it's been really cool to, you know, from seeing him as a young guy to come up now where he's just obviously an incredible talent. And honestly, I really think he's just getting started because he's got the skill set, and he's got the passing, the catching, the throwing, and the moves, and the IQ. And I think as his body develops and he grows out of that, you know, middle school, high school body into that college professional body, he's only going to continue to get better. So I look forward to seeing him, and it's been, you know, it means a lot that he says that because he is obviously such a high recruit. But I want him to keep having that success just because I know how much he loves it and how much he cares.
How high is his ceiling?
I think as far as he can push himself athletically, you know, I think lacrosse is, from a lacrosse standpoint, skill and IQ level, his ceiling is, you know, as high as anyone's. I think it's going to, where he's going to be challenged like anybody, like I was, is how much can I push myself in the weight room and in conditioning and getting faster and stronger so that, okay, right now he plays a very physical game of lacrosse when you watch him, right? He likes to body his defenders. How much is he going to be able to do that at the college level? Maybe not, you know, as a freshman, it might be difficult for him. So maybe he has to work a little more on his agility so that he can, you know, split and roll and beat guys with quickness and speed sometimes versus just body. And then on a smaller defender, he can body. A bigger defender, he can use speed. So I think if he can round that out a little bit from a physical standpoint, he'll really be able to do anything with the ball. And then I think he just needs to work on his left hand a little bit. But I'm excited. I just hope he doesn't feel too much pressure because he's already done so much in the sport and accomplished so much, and everyone has such high standards for him. You know, I know what it's, I've been there after, you know, a few, not, no one had high standards for me when I went into college, but after a few years, the standards went up, and it's just, you feel pressure and you almost forget how to have fun at some point. So I hope he can just, you know, take the pressure and use it for positive things, but also still have fun out there and enjoy this sport and, you know, let him enjoy it because it is a great sport when you can have fun.
Are you still having fun playing right now?
I am.
Every day.
I am. I am honestly. I mean, like I said, Saturday was one of the most fun games I've had in a while. And we have a good crew, and listen, when things are going your way and you're winning games, it's fun. Winning cures everything, as I've talked to people about over the course of my career. But I love competing, you know, and I've taken a lot of pressure off myself from an individual standpoint and like worrying about being all pro or attacking of the year and being points and all that stuff. Like I don't care about that anymore. You know, I've done all that and I want to win games and I want to be a good teammate and a good leader and have fun. And I try, and you know, surprisingly, as serious as I am and as competitive as I am, I'm definitely one of like the lighter guys on the team when it comes to just saying things and trying to keep the mood a little bit lighter and make sure we're having fun. And I think that's definitely one of our focuses too, in the second half of the season, because we all get caught up in the wins and losses, and if you can have fun, you know, usually you're going to play better. So
you mentioned your hamstring. The US tryouts came out like seemed like it came out of nowhere last month, right? And unfortunately, you get the invite back for September. Not to keep bringing it back to that, but just to say that for the rest of the season here, just what percentage is your hamstring at now, and how are you feeling health wise?
Yeah, I'm 100%. I felt really good last game. Best I felt in a while, honestly. And yeah, the U.S. tryouts, the timing was interesting. You know, training camp is long. It's a lot because you don't really play. You're on your own, and then you go right into 2-a-days, and it's intense. And then you go right into your first game. You really don't have a recovery period. And I kind of felt my hamstring tightening up over training camp. And sure enough, that first dodge of the first game, it popped a little bit. And really shouldn't have played that game. It was diagnosed as a cramp because I had strength in it, and it wasn't. And then shouldn't have played in the second game either, and kind of just hobbled around, and then finally got back, and the All-Star break was good. So I finally felt like myself dodging last weekend, and I'm 100%, and hopefully I can stay that way. But I mean, I'm excited for the end of the season here. A lot of travel, but it'll be fun.
Definitely. And I asked that to say, because your role has remained the same as a quarterback in this offense, but how has your game evolved since you were putting up those record setting numbers with the Lizards?
I think it's just more of, you know, I guess I was a quarterback always, but I think my quarterback role was maybe, you know, in the Lizards days, was having the ball on my stick more and dodging and creating offense. Whereas now, you know, I'm not, that's not expected of me, I guess. Like if the ball comes through X and, you know, our offense is to move it to the backside and, you know, for me to dodge in certain situations, but it's not just let's dodge and get the ball behind a Rob and let him do something and hopefully someone gets open or he gets a shot. So I think it's evolved. Also for me, it's just evolved. Like, I don't feel like I need to do that every time, or, whereas I used to like want, it was like, I matured, you know, to put it simply, I used to think like, okay, the ball is best when it's in my stick and we're going to get a scoring opportunity. If I have the ball, I can get a shot off, you know, at any time. So I can make that happen, or I can find someone, and feed them for a goal. Whereas now it's like I've matured and I trust everyone around me as well to make great plays. Whereas I was maybe a little immature earlier in my career and just wanted to do a lot of it myself. Maybe had more of that college mentality versus the pro mentality when there's so many other great players around you. You know, really shouldn't get stuck in one guy's stick. I don't care who they are. It's there's a lot of guys can make plays out there, and you got to trust those guys around you to make those plays.
Yeah, speaking of college, obviously Cornell made it to the NCAA championship this year. Didn't pull it out, but I have a really strong relationship with a certain graduating player that's now in the PLL. His dad, Jack Piatelli, and I do a podcast for the Lacrosse Channel. Awesome.
Yeah,
and John. So I went to the tailgate for Cornell.
Good tailgate.
And let me tell you, the good is an understatement, my dude. It was lit. It was out of control. I actually got to meet, I didn't realize so many people were Cornell alums. I got to meet Bruce Arena,
yeah,
who actually like played lacrosse and coached lacrosse at Virginia. Yeah. And he was a very sweet man, very incredible. Like just the atmosphere around that alumni group, I was not prepared for it. And then it just kind of hit me in the face. What is your relationship with the Cornell alums and how that kind of is building now again back into a powerhouse with Busick?
Are you a it's a tough shirt. Are you a rocking the Maryland shirt? Are you a Cornell fan now? We'd love to
have, I mean, with Jack, yeah. I have to be.
We've always said it, and I don't think, you know, I'm glad you experienced that, because we've always said, you know, we've got an incredible alumni group and we consider ourselves the Cornell lacrosse family. And when recruiting kids, you really can't compare us to any other school. And for you to say that, it means a lot, because I know a lot of us take pride in that. And you even see it, like, you know, TD, who went to Yale, right? His brother was a goalie, and he was at the tailgates. And he's like, you know, even guys like that, like, you guys really are different when it comes to your alumni group. And it really started with Richie Moran and the bond that he built with his players, and almost holding them accountable to come back and to reach out to the next generation and to take them under their wing and show them the way and stay in contact with them. You know, from the time I was at Cornell, older guys were reaching out to me and wanted to get together and get to know me and see if there's any way they can help. And that happens at all levels and is continuing to happen. And, yeah, it's just like this, there's just this bond that has been created, and it's hard to explain, but we do call ourselves the Cornell lacrosse family for a reason. And if anybody wants to come in for the weekend, we'll welcome you, and we do it right. And we just have this sense of pride and appreciation for one another. And I think it really did start with Richie Moran, and Coach Tamberoni did an unbelievable job of continuing that, and Coach DeLuca. And, you know, from a player standpoint, it just starts with pride and working as hard as we do, and you know, considering ourselves the blue collar Ivy, where we want to outwork these our opponents and do the little things right, and, you know, the diving for the balls, and you know, in between the 21s and George Boyardi stats, and you know, legacy of Amy McEnany. So there's just so many things that come into play over the years that have just continued to just make it more of that family, you know, from Richie Moran to Coach Tamberoni, Coach DeLuca, and you know, George Boyardi passing away, and Ian McNay passing away. Now Connor, right? Connor's a Cornell guy. He had been there when we were having success and had good teams, and he knew what it took, and played for some of those coaches and was around when Richie was around. Jordan Stevens was with Connor. They were same class, and both of them together are an amazing duo. I was just with Steve Mock on the golf course 2 days ago, and we talked about, you know, we need to keep these two at Cornell. You know, how do we do it? You know, we can't let one of them go, because them having been at Cornell and experienced it, it's bringing us back as alumni. You know, no disrespect to other coaches that have been there in the previous years, but, you know, we weren't as excited to come back as alumni. You know, I played for Coach DeLuca and Coach Tamberoni. They're not there anymore. So it's just a little different when you come back to a school. But now, when everybody loves Connor and everybody loves Jordan, and they played there, and we saw them out there, everyone wants to come back and be a part of it again. And just the energy around it is different. And their play on the field was embodied that as well. So it was great to have them back there. I don't think anybody gave us a shot to be as close as that game was. So obviously extremely proud of them, and hopefully we're just getting started with those two, and hopefully we keep them, because I don't want to lose Jordan somewhere.
Rob, you get 10 end line restarts matched up against Gavin Adler. How many are you putting past him?
I'll just say we'll go 50%. I don't know. He's freaking good, man. I'll be honest, and, you know, keep PG a little bit here. I went up for a red white scrimmage in February, and I had Jerry Raganese's wedding on Friday night, and went to the wedding and drove up the next morning and played in the red and white scrimmage. And I didn't really do much against him. A little hungover, but he's good. So I'm glad he's coming back for another year, and I'm sure we'll get a one-on-one matchup. We'll get some one-on-one matchups soon enough.
Your Wi-Fi cut out right at the point you said you were hungover. So a little suspect.
I was hungover, and we were playing in a red-white scrimmage, and he did a pretty good job on me. It was also, you know, 20 degrees. So I love Gavin. He's awesome. I'd love to go up against him in some, you know, summer 75 degree weather and get after one another. I'm sure it'd be a pretty good battle as we both bleed red, but he's a stud.
Yeah, one of the you know, listening to you talk and the other times I've talked to you, and I ask a lot of players, kind of pro players specifically, this question. Some of it's off record, but I'll ask it on record because we're here. And by the way, if I'm on the podcast, it's PG-13 minimum. That's just how it goes. Why don't you do more coaching? Like I know you do your skills clinics and things like that, but yeah. I'm always shocked when players that I can tell really love the game and stay in it and play it for as long as they can, as long as they're able to contribute and win, you know, don't jump back into coaching. Is there like a reason that you haven't, you know, kind of entered those waters at all?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even do much of the clinics anymore. I think I would really enjoy working with college teams and college players. And honestly, something that I've started to think about more and more as the PLL is really having success is potentially down the road coaching pro, because I think I've played for a while and could maybe add some value as being the coach of a pro team and do some things differently. And that will help a team have success. So, but I don't know. I think as long as I'm playing, you know, I'm not ready to coach, because, you know, if I'm coaching, I'll be like, you know, almost that, just give me your stick, I can do it. You know, let me show you, you know, where it's like, you got to be a little bit more compassionate in that sense, I guess. So a lot of people ask me, my mom asked me a lot, and a lot of people that are close to me that know me. So it's interesting that you say that. They say, you know, do you ever want to coach? Like, I think you'd be a great coach. And so I don't know. I think part of it's because I'm still playing. And part of it is, you know, we'll see where lacrosse is when I'm done playing and what I'm doing. But I would like to, I'm out in Long Island now. I moved out of the city. So, you know, maybe getting involved with a high school team, just, you know, voluntarily is something that I'll look at doing in the coming years. But I do think it'd be, you know, listen, one of the things one of my answers is if I did coach, I'd want to coach Cornell, but you know, I think Connor's got that job locked up now. So you know, I don't know. It would have to be a cool opportunity or, you know, or pro, like I said, which would be fun. So we'll see. But I appreciate you saying that, Kyle. I appreciate that. And it's something that I think about more and more as my playing days, you know, wind down.
I will tell you, coaching is the source, man. It's the best. If you get a good team and good kids, like there's no better feeling, man. You know, like it really, and I didn't get it until this year, last year, when I went back to coaching high school, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It can also be brutal, but it is amazing.
I think maybe the clinics and stuff and, you know, maybe took a little bit out of me, the camps and the long days. You know, I think coaching a team is different, and that's something that I really haven't experienced to the fullest yet, you know, just in doses. But I could definitely see that.
Now you guys are in Frisco this weekend at the Star.
Go Cowboys.
You're a Cowboys fan?
I am.
Oh boy. What's your favorite Cowboys, man?
Who's my favorite Cowboy?
No, your favorite memory.
Oh, Tony Romo. Fumbling the snap, of course, because that's just the one. I am actually the biggest Tony Romo fan and think he's an amazing quarterback and doesn't get enough credit. If you look up his statistics, if you're ever bored one day, just look up his statistics when he was playing, compared him to Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. He's right up there with the best of them. He just had bad defenses and he fumbled a snap, so he doesn't get a lot of credit.
Well, how was it playing the Dallas Rattlers and the ML days down there? Talk about the environment that gave off and just how excited you are to play the Chaos this weekend.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, listen, it's a professional facility. It's state of the art. And I think the exciting part about going back there is that, you know, the MLO was great, you know, for using that facility, and we wouldn't be there without them. But, you know, the PLL is just different. You know, that place on Sunday is going to be packed, and it's inside, it's loud. It's going to be an intimate atmosphere against the Chaos team that needs to win. So it's going to be, and we can't afford to lose either. So it should be the best game of the weekend, I think, on Sunday. So I can't wait, and I'm excited to be back down there.
Best for last.
You got 3 games left till the playoffs. I mean, you don't have to win out because you have teams underneath you, but it's a very slim margin. You know, it's not like soccer where you get relegated or anything, but missing the playoffs is definitely not something that people expect of this Redwoods team. What do you guys need to change in order to get there? Because I could rattle off some stats to you that aren't very nice, but I won't because I can tell you what you're last in.
Let me hear them.
All right. You are last in assists. Average score. You are last. This is so mean. You are last in goal. You are last in save percentage. Last in clears. I mean, I'm sorry to do this to you. I really wish you didn't ask me to do that. Last in saves. It's you know.
2-4.
Yeah, I mean, so what? Obviously, those are not great as team centric numbers, but in terms of what you need to do in a macro sense, what's something that, like, pick out one thing that you just absolutely need to do better, and I can tell you what I think it is, and we can see if we have the same answer.
Well, it's a very general statement, but we need to not beat ourselves. And you know, you talk about clearing. You know, I think we failed to clear 3 times in a row. Last game against the Atlas when we were up to 5-1, and part of that is also some of those, you know, end of the second half, we let in a goal with 4 seconds left, which has happened numerous times this year for us. So we're beating ourselves in these plays, whether it's at the end of possessions or the end of quarters or halves, where we're letting in last second goals that in a game are hurting us. And part of that is the clearing game. I think shooting, you know, we're last in assists, probably because we haven't been shooting the ball well. I think we were at 22% before last game. And we were at 28, 29% last season. So that is something offensively. I was with the offensive first. And I think yes, we're not scoring enough goals. And we scored 3 goals the second game of the season, which is pathetic. And even in our 1 goal losses, we were, you know, just got into double digits and didn't get into double digits against the Archers. So we need to shoot better and we need to stop beating ourselves. I think from a defensive and clearing standpoint, is allowing teams extra opportunities, which is that. And then, you know, obviously I think something that people look to a lot, which I don't know how, you know, is goalies and faceoffs. And I know, you know, listen, Jack Kelly had a great game last game, even though, you know, a lot of goals were scored, and TD is going to hopefully find his groove here. But faceoffs are interesting, you know, like the Atlas with Trevor beat the Archers by a goal and won 82% of faceoffs, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's crazy, you know, when you think about it. Is it really that important, or is it, I don't know. It makes you crazy.
If you can create something out of it, I think it's very, very important. But if you're just winning and then not getting a point out of it, it's not as productive as people make it out to be. What I want to make sure I clarify that so the faceoff army doesn't come after me because they're legion.
Yeah.
You know,
what was your,
I think it's, for me, watching you guys play, it's a lot of 1-pass, 2-pass possessions. And if you can get up to 3 or 4, I think with all your personnel, you have so much great power up top and you have such like slippery guys coming in from that right wing. And then you have Jules that is so multifaceted from the wing, from up top, from behind you guys playing picks. I think that really improves the team, just getting more passes on every possession. Like if you could get 3-4 passes on every possession instead of 1 or 2, and maybe not settling, but like trying to make something out of something because you feel like you need it. A little more patience, I think, would really go a long way for you guys.
Yeah, I agree. It's something we talked about from training camp, and for whatever reason, in practice, the ball flies around, and we get the games, and just gets stuck in sticks sometimes. But I agree with that.
Another part of the offense where we haven't seen a lot of, or that isn't necessarily a part of your game a ton, is 2-man games. Anyone, I feel like you and Jules would click super well off 2-man games. Do you want to have more screens behind, slam picks at GLE, that kind of thing? Is that kind of another aspect that you think about?
Yeah, I love it with a short stick. You know, I don't like bringing a pole to a pole necessarily. It doesn't really change matchups, or if the defense just switches easily, they'll just switch and they have a pole on a pole. They have a pole on the matchup they want anyway. I think we have had some success bringing a short stick behind, and you know, it opens up the crease a little bit for guys to move. It brings two guys behind, only four up top. And I do think we've had some success. And if you go back and watch some games, and we do get some good looks off it, it once again, it's just shooting better and capitalizing off it. So I do love it, and I'm pushing more for some short long behind. And I think Kavanaugh and I will start to do some more stuff together, maybe early in offense. But yeah, I'm not opposed to it at all. I think pick play in professional lacrosse is very underrated, because defenses don't spend enough time together during the week to really work through it and talk about it and really be their best at it. So if you can confuse the defense and mix them up and make them actually defend and have to think, the more chances you're going to have of scoring a goal. So it's a very, very underrated.
Unless they're Canadian, in which case they're just raised to play pick game.
Exactly.
Which I think I think we've seen with, that's the ability that the Chaos have, right? Like, they can, if teams try to do that against them, it literally doesn't work. That's the one thing you can't do against them. But the thing that people have had success with is multi-pass possessions against them, and trying to limit, you know, burn to less than 8 points is a good idea.
Yeah.
Right.
He's something else, that guy. His shooting's on another level. It's all those guys. I mean, I watched that the world championship, whatever it was,
sixes,
the world game sixes. It was absurd. I was so frustrated. I turned it off at halftime.
Yeah. America's never winning that, by the way. I hate to break it to everybody. America's never winning sixes. Like, after watching that, you're like, oh no.
I know.
What is,
I know,
this? We made a bad thing.
Oh no.
You made a bad thing. Like, I hope, you know what? It's great though. Like, let me ask you about sixes. Cause I think it's less controversial now than it was when it was introduced. I think people realize the purpose of it now is to get sticks in hands, right? Like, that's great. I can't argue with that. What is your perspective, and has it changed from when you first heard about it to now?
I think it's cool. It's fun to watch. It's cool to play. And I guess to get sticks in hands in other countries, it's cool because it's an easier format. But I mean, my whole problem with lacrosse in general is that you have the world games, which is, you know, a different rules and different format than professional lacrosse, which is a different format than college lacrosse, which is a different format than high school lacrosse. And then you have indoor, then you have sixes now, which is a different format. So it's like, you know, there's a big effort to get lacrosse in the Olympics. And it's like, at the end of the day, what are we really trying to accomplish with lacrosse being in the Olympics? And what is it going to do for this? Is it really going to take lacrosse in the United States to the next level? Or is it going to get lacrosse around the world to the next level? You know, what is it going to do? I don't know if lacrosse in the Olympics is really going to do that much for the sport, other than it being in the Olympics in 2028. And this is cool. But is it really helping grow the sport in introducing a new format that no one in the United States is going to play? Unless they're going to change the rules at every level, or is the point to grow it internationally? I don't know what the main reason is for it, but those are my thoughts on sixes in the Olympics. And, you know, what exactly are we trying to accomplish here with so many different versions of lacrosse? Because if you watch that, you know, sixes, and then you watch PLL game, you're like, wait, this is a different game.
It's very improbable at this point, but, hypothetical here, the Woods make the top four championship series, and you have a lock on the 12-man roster. How do you fare in an environment like that when you're playing sixes? You got to run back, play some defense. What's your expectation of how you would fare with that?
And I guess, listen, I was a point guard in basketball, so I think I'd be okay. I probably would train differently for it and get in shape and running shape, but I think I might be a little better than you think I might be.
Listen, Rob has two cause turnovers on the ride this year. Okay.
I can play some D. I don't know. I don't know how good the ball going behind the goal in sixes is, but I can get up and down, and it'd be fun. I would love to try it out. So hopefully maybe the Woods.
It's just that one of eight shooting can't fly in the sixes.
Man. One of eight shooting, not gonna work. That's not going to work at any level. That's not going to work at sixes. That's not going to work at any level. But it's all right. I got some reps in yesterday, and I'll be getting in some today. So hopefully we can, you know, maybe go 2 of 8 this weekend.
Yeah,
that'll be.
Let's hope. Well, Rob, you've been super generous with your time here. It's been electric having you on the PLL Happy Hour podcast along with Kyle Devitt. Thank you all for listening. If you like what you heard, tell your friends, subscribe. Any last words from you, Kyle or Rob? Thanks for joining.
Yeah, I'll just say you can follow me on Twitter at the Kyle Devitt and check out my writing at lifejournal.com and my newsletter at lacrosity.substack.com. Subscribe, it's free, but pay me if you want.
No, thanks for having me. This has been fun, guys. I really enjoyed being on here and just talking in this casual atmosphere. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's what the happy hour is for. Love it. All right, thanks, guys.
Fun. Thanks, Rob.
Next good time, I'll send you guys some Cheetos to drink while we're doing it, all right?
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. See you later. See ya.
Thanks so much, Rob, for joining the podcast. I thought that was a great interview, Kyle. I thought he was open. He was maybe a little monotone at times, but what he said, I thought, trumped how he said it.
Yeah, I love that Rob and I have the same opinion about sixes, and I never thought that I could say that about anybody. I think it's hilarious. But, you know, I didn't get to say after he was done talking that I was like, all right, I agree. No, I'm like, he's right, though. Like, what are we doing?
Well, all I'm saying is I don't think that opinion is unique. I think there are a lot of people that have the opinion of not understanding the purpose. And, you know, I'm not best position to give the whole rundown.
What's your opinion, Kevin?
We need our boy Terry Foy to jump on the podcast and save me and give us the long view of why it is important. But my view is, like, listen, I'm the most laid back and, like, laid back on one side and, like, diehard fan on the other, in the fact that, like, give me all of the lacrosse styles and I will adjust it. I will love it. And I'm not saying that just to, like, remain on the fence, because in all transparency, I didn't watch a lot of the sixes. I was away that weekend. It was a 3-day tournament kind of deal. So I do have to inform myself more and watch more of it. But what I am informed about is the second half of this season, Kyle.
What a transition.
We're getting down to the nitty-gritty here with four games left. We got Dallas, Denver, Seattle, or Salt Lake, and then Seattle to round out the regular season.
Yep.
Let's start off with, so it's Saturday, Sunday this week, not Friday, Saturday this week. So Saturday is Archers Atlas. Start things off on ESPN. Nice little cable spot at 2 p.m.
Company man.
This is a great game.
This is the reason this game is great is because these teams they can say whatever they want about playing defense, but, like, no one wants you to play defense in this game. Just play. This could be a better all-star game than the all-star game if everything breaks right. Do you know what I mean? Like, so much offensive talent. And this is the point in a season, in a pro season, where things start to peak. And especially in terms of offense. So I think what people don't realize about PLL is, you know, PLL is not necessarily matchup based. It's opportunity based in terms of how to create offense and how to utilize your defense. Once you get past teams that are utilizing their defense, you can pretty much do anything on offense when you have the right personnel. And these two teams in particular have incredible, unpredictable, unstoppable offenses when they're going. When they're not going, as we saw with Atlas against Redwoods in the first, like, what was that, the first, like, 8 minutes, 5-0 down, it looked bad. But that's the thing, they can always come back. Offense is the heart of both of these teams, no matter what they say. And I think that's definitely the way to look at this one. This could be, you know, we just had Rob on, he said Redwoods chaos could be the game of the weekend. This is the game of the weekend, man. Archers Atlas is always fun, and I can't wait to see it.
I don't know what you're, because you don't want the Face-Off Academy to come after you, or the Legion that you referenced, take is about the Face-Off and its importance in our sport. But Trevor Baptiste is really important. And for the game flow to match what you're describing, I think if Trevor Baptiste doesn't play, I think it has a lot better of a chance to, like, Justin Nacio, I can't believe he went 73%, but you got to play Stephen Kelly if he's not hurt. I don't know what the Cannons were thinking with that one. Fast forward to this weekend, the matchup between a couple rookies, if Faulp gets the nod there, I think lends itself to more of a, both offenses can just go ham instead of maybe, because if the Archers aren't getting the ball, that offense gets out of rhythm quick. And we've seen that happen in the pre Amen era in regards to this season. But if with Grant back, I mean, that can change everything, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, not to disparage the Face-Off Legion. We're friends. Let's not fight. But in the pros, with as many possessions as there are with a short shot clock, it matters a little bit less. Like, it's just numbers. Like, sorry, like, facts aren't mean. That's just a fact. That's what happens. When there's more possessions, there's less of a need to win faceoffs at an 80% clip. That said, doing that gives you a good chance to score. You know, it gets you extra possessions. And I think that's what all levels of lacrosse is possessions. Right? That's probably why people hate sixes, because possessions, like, don't matter in sixes. It's more like, because everybody's just going to, like, keep firing balls. It doesn't matter. But yeah, that's a great point. And I think what you have to look at too is wing play, short stick, D-mini play. Those are entrance and how those play into transition. Because if this game turns into a transition, like, you know, basically pickup game, which it could do, let's be real, that could very well happen here. It's going to be super entertaining, but it also could be super disastrous for the team that loses. So I think this is a very key game in terms of, like, deciding seeding as well.
Hey, sorry about that.
All good.
My Wi-Fi is being crappy, but this podcast is striving on. So did you see last weekend's matchups when Graham Hossick barely guarded Lyle Thompson? If at all, I don't think he really. So I think if the game plan was to shut Asher Nolting off completely, let Lyle get his, and let the rest of the Cannons' offense kind of suffer as a result, maybe it worked. But I was really surprised to see Hossick not on Lyle, and I'll be interested to see who he matches up against if it's not Teep this upcoming weekend.
There is something to be said about putting your best defender on the other team's worst attackman. And the thing to be said, like, it sounds stupid, right? Like, it sounds,
I would say that makes sense when you're talking about a guy who's also known as, like, a super communicator off ball genius. JT Giles Harris can kind of do it all. Hossick, I don't know if anyone's ever described him like that.
No, but what you do is you make him into the hammer, right? So, and I think, you know, listen, no, we're going to get to the Cannons, but, like, how, what is this roster? I looked at the Cannons roster the other day and I'm just like, you don't even have any middies. What is this? This is disgusting. Like, how are you a pro? Like, this is what, but okay, great. This is my soapbox moment. Ready? I haven't had one all podcast. I got it now. Yo, you need GMs. You need GMs to build these rosters. Call me. I'll find some people. We'll do it together. You just need it, because the level of attackman playing midfield in this entire league is out of control. It is out of control.
It's an overload.
It needs to stop. I hate it. Don't you hate it? Like, I'm just like, oh, well, he's going to run to the box. That's going to create some transition. There are some guys that have done well. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm maximalizing my point here, but
right.
I just think you need to have real middies play midi. Real guys that can run play midi. Instead of guys that can run a straight line. Midfield is not straight ahead. Midfield is diagonal. It's backwards. It's all over the place. You have to be able to move in a way that's very non-linear. And I think a lot of attackmen are linear, you know, and when you see them play, and that means, you know, one direction, right? I really feel like that's how it goes and one way to play. But midfielders have to be adaptable. And that's one of the things that I think is missing in some of these teams that just don't have enough actual midfielders. That's why you're getting pasted. You just don't have enough guys that are versatile enough to do the things that you need to do that aren't just score and pass. You know what I mean? I think I don't think it's a league-wide thing. It's like it's a team-by-team basis.
And I think the cannons are to the extreme, like you mentioned.
It's insane.
The Archers, they asked Trey Leclerc, who played attack all throughout college, ran out of the box, sometimes create some mismatches, played some short stick defensive midfield this week. Everyone praised him in the post-game press conferences, canned all three of the shots. Like, that is the kind of production that you want if you're going to convert an attackman. But he's also, unlike other attackmen, in that he's got the build to and the athleticism and to the play on that end of the field.
The power, and he's the exception that proves the rule. That's what I'm going to say. You know what I mean?
And just to transition into the next game, we don't really have that with these next two teams, right?
These are very complete teams.
Yeah. They've got complete teams, and I've been looking forward to this matchup. I know you said Archers Atlas is your matchup of the weekend. This is mine. Chrome Whip Snakes. Building the power rankings each week, I've just been dying to see these two teams play each other, Kyle.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's because of coaching and locker room. These two teams have the best coaching and the best locker room, in my opinion. And it's funny because, like, everyone's like, oh, I don't know about Chrome, like, you saw their roster starting the year. Even I was like not convinced, but then I remembered Sudo. And the thing that he builds is culture. He builds purpose. He builds family. He does all the things in the locker room that other coaches, like, I'm not saying they don't do it, but he just does it so well. I mean, Towers is another example of a guy like this that just can build a culture that becomes a team's identity. Like, one of the things that I think some of these teams struggle with in their first year in the PLL, it's a little different now with most of them, is having a team identity. Like, what kind of team are you? Are you going to smash? Are you a smash mouth team? Are you a fun and gun team? Are you a defensive 6-on-6 team? You know, do you like to slow it down? Do you like to go fast? You do have to have something that you're very good at, right? And I think that's part of your identity. And with this matchup, I think you're totally right in terms of pure tactics and like vitriol and like real fun, like punch you in the face lacrosse. This is the better game. I agree. I just love goals. Right. I'm just an offensive guy. I love goals. I'm not.
This is why the game is on ESPN for sure. And but yeah, like Joe Nardella ends his press conference up in Fairfield. I was in and out of the All-Star game. Did not see this play. Joe Nardella ends his press conference with, I didn't forget that Farrell tried to take my head off in the All-Star game. Which, you know, a laid-back, casual environment, not conducive to big hits. If you're trying to take someone's head off in the All-Star game, of course they're going to remember. So I think Nardella, he might go 90%.
I mean, people don't forget. You know, we actually had Nardella on my other podcast, and he was very, like, measured and great, but, like, you could see there was, like, a little demon bubbling underneath. Like, you can't contain that dude. And that's why he's good, right? Like, this is the other thing too that I learned about him doing that podcast, is that he didn't go into Rutgers as a faceoff guy. He was a two-way middie. He could score, he could do all the things. And now he's developed his craft to the point where he's a high-level faceoff guy and he can do all those other things, which is why I think he's the best faceoff guy. Like, he's the best overall player at that position. And you can throw percentages and all that other stuff at me, and I'm just like, yeah, can you play defense? Can you shoot?
I think the knock against Baptiste was that he wasn't athletic as Nardella. But I think he's picked it up last few indoor seasons. He's got his stick right, and then I think he's really worked on, like...
Yeah,
there's no question he's the best faceoff guy, Baptiste is.
Yeah, I'm saying all around. Like, in terms of, like...
No, I know you are.
Do you want this guy on the field? I think Baptiste, too, I think you're totally right, because I remember a play where he tiptoed and caught it and dunked it earlier in the season. And I was like, oh, that's a box play. Like you don't, he doesn't make that unless he played box. And that's like how different types of the game can feed into each other. So I think you're right. Obviously. I mean, what is he winning? Like 80% right now, 82%, you know, he's a,
but still really good. Still really
well, he was 82.
It went down because he freaking like tore his hamstring and continued to play that whole fourth quarter.
Right. Right. Which is but, not great, which is what I'm trying not to do when I go to class. Yeah, no, I love this game. This is a good game too. I mean, listen, it's the PLL, man. There's no bad games except for the next one we're going to talk about.
Oh, exactly. We've seen the last three or four weekends.
What?
Seen the last three or four weekends, it's been full of one goal, one possession games.
That's what it's all about, man. I don't like. No one likes a blowout. Nobody. No one likes a blowout. So, and you know, if we're looking at blowouts this week, do you want to go to the next game, or you want to keep talking about Chrome Whips?
I think that's the perfect lead into the next game. But is it really going to be a blowout? I think the Cannons are going to be hungry enough, and I think the Water Dogs are injured enough that it'll be close.
That's fair. Yeah, the injury card's tough. It definitely changes how you set up your team. Although the Water Dogs are playing Charlie Kitchen in this game, making his debut.
Breaking news.
That got announced earlier.
But you today. Only get on the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Love it.
There we go. So,
boy, CAA all-time points leader, I believe. Ryan Tierney broke it the next spring.
Yes. But Albany Firewolf, big shooter, big body, like going to be tough to stop him. I think he kind of stepped right in and solved some of their problems. Yeah, with the Cannons, man, like, again, we already went over it. Like, the team's just not an incomplete team. You know, there's not enough between the boxes for me, or between the two point lines in this case, because it's PLL. I just don't think there's enough there for them to win. And if they do want to win, they have to win there. Like, I think Lyle's on have you ever heard of the Jordan Rules book?
Yeah.
You heard of this? Okay. Yeah, so
I was about to mention that when I kind of described the way that, like, the Archers played.
Yeah. Why don't you tell them what the Jordan Rules are?
Well, so the Jordan Rule, so what the, I was misconstruing it with another, but the Jordan Rules is basically beating them up enough, right, to kind of, you know, everyone would slap Michael Jordan around a ton and try to get it in his head. Doesn't work against Lyle. Doesn't work against MJ. But I was also referencing the fact that they would kind of let him get his and let the rest of the team also suffer as a result.
I think the second part of that is more applicable here, where Lyle could get 8 points. Great. Who else is getting points now? You know, like if you shut down the rest of that offense, which we've seen happen several times this year, it's going to be tough for you to be tough for them to come back into the game.
It's crazy too, because the Water Dogs, I think more than any other team, are the best equipped to handle all these injuries.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many versatile players. So many versatile players. Yeah. Such a complete team. Chris Xavier went back down low, did awesome against Dylan Malloy. And Ben Randall and Liam Burns have been spectacular for the last season and a half. So I think that defense is really awesome. The midfield's really, really fun to watch and athletic. And it's going to end up being who could kind of figure it out between the role players offensively, in my opinion, in this one.
So you think it's going to be tight?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like 11-12, 13-12, Water Dogs pull it out.
I think it's going to be like 16-8, Water Dogs.
Is that what you think is... So, pull behind the curtain for the fans here. We haven't seen the 19-man game day lineups. Are you anticipating Michael Sowers is good to go?
No, I think he's probably out. I don't care. I think
you think Kitchen is the ball carrier.
They're not the same. It's not same. It's not the same kind of player. But yeah, I think they have enough juice to and again, I really just think it's middle of the field win. If you win the middle of the field against the Cannons, you win the game. Period. Period. Period.
Not enough just foam cannons on the cannons. This just in.
No, they're and listen, I talked to their defensive coordinator last week in an event and gave him a question that he did not like. So it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun times. I love getting back into PLL stuff because people are like, this is the funny thing. People won't tell you about this with PLL guys. Like, not the guys, but everybody in the PLL is like so sensitive. So if you like make a joke, they're just like, what? I'm like, no, man, come on. 80% of the things I say are jokes. Like, relax. Like, don't get upset. But yeah, then they'll get upset and they'll be like, well, you said this. And I'll be like, I did say that. I did. You know what I mean? Like, that's the funniest part about pro lacrosse is like people get mad at you about stuff. And then it's just like, yeah, you really didn't have to get mad. You could just kind of just take it.
Yeah, like, we're just chopping it up. We're just joking around here.
On that. It's just a podcast, man.
But let's bleed that into the finale of the weekend. Rob described it as the best game of the weekend. I think we've previewed the woods enough. Chaos. 1-5. We kind of expected this start with the Bandits core away for the first 3 or 4 games. And then since it's been, you know, more of the same. The defense is still giving up a ton of bad shots, and Blaze, if he's not playing at his MVP form, then it's going to be tough to win, especially without Max Adler.
I like, who is even on this team right now? Like, this is the hardest team. If you're a fan of this team, like, it's the hardest team to follow. You know what I mean? And that's not like, I'm not like saying that as like a disparaging thing. It's just a fact. Like, you have to check this roster. This is the 19 man that comes out where I'm like, who's playing? The other ones, I'm like, I kind of know who's playing, but the Chaos, I'm just like, ooh, this could be fun. Who's playing this week? And it's like, which Canadian? It's like a game. Like, which Canadian do I not know?
Right.
You know? But, like, they've done a good job of getting talent. I think the problem with this Chaos team is that the talent is not meshing with each other yet because there's not enough games. There's not enough practices, not enough time together to get everything the way they want. But like we saw in Utah, if they make the playoffs, it kind of doesn't matter. So they do need to win these games because if they do get it together, they're a dangerous team. It's not like they're like a pushover. You know what I mean? They're not terrible. It's just they're very – I'll say this. They're very disorganized. It seems like when they go on offense, they like don't – everybody's trying to get a turn. And that does not work. It doesn't matter how good you are. That will not work.
They're still working through the kinks, if you will. Like we saw like the offense last season didn't really put it together until the playoffs. And they were awesome to watch. They moved from side to side so well with Dane in that Josh Burke connection. And when, you know, if they're going to be the whip snake's kryptonite in terms of Josh Burke just dangling his stick in front of Matt Dunn for 30 seconds, begging for him to dislodge it. He's not gonna. And he's gonna shoot a pass. Like, those kind of highlights are crazy. I've always been in the belief that they should get Mac O'Keefe more involved. And I get your point about the lineups were more representative of the first half of the season than they have been in the last couple weeks. But that to say, I think just expect more consistency moving forward with the core that they do have.
Right. But who's the leading scorer on the Chaos? Do you know off the top of your head without looking? Don't look. I didn't know either. I'm gonna confess, I didn't know. I just looked it up. Do you know?
It's not. I wanted to say Ryan Smith, but I don't think it's him.
No.
It's gonna be. Tell us.
Dude, it's Mac O'Keefe. I thought it was Byrne. It's Mac O'Keefe. Mac O'Keefe has 18 points. Like, he also leads the team in goals. You know, or no, sorry, he has 11 points. He has 7 goals. But, like, and he's shooting 38%. Like, what are we doing?
So even that, like, 11 points, not enough. Like,
No, it's not. It's definitely not enough.
He can be the team's leading scorer, and still, I am going to beg Andy Towers to get him more involved in whether it's pick and pops or getting him into those like Spain pick and rolls where he's like the roll off man or just come around the other side of around a bunch of screens, have it like swing around when Chase Fraser can find him. Whatever you need to do. Just he's such a lethal shooter that you need to have him involved in the offense.
But like, isn't it crazy with all these like superstar guys and like scorers and Dodgers that Mac O'Keefe is the guy that has the goods? Like, not that he's bad. And here's the thing, like I love Mac O'Keefe because again, I love he's the leading shooters.
Scorer in NCAA history.
Right. But you're saying they need to make more plays for him to win. Like, I agree with you, but that's crazy to me considering who is on this team, right? That's kind of more of my point is like the identity of this team is very box based, and you're having a guy who is not, I mean, he's adapted, but he's not a box guy. He's a mid-range, long-range, inside. He's just a shooter of all trades. Like he can get anything done. He can get anything past any goalie. His deception is next level. His power is incredible. His release, I think, is what separates him. Him and Ryan Brown have the best release I've ever seen, I think. How it comes off the stick is so unpredictable for goalies. You can tell when he scores, goalies go, what? If you're ever wondering what a goalie is, like, if they were screened or if they know they should have had a shot, if they do this, if they go palms up, like, I don't know, like, what do you want me to do? That means there's no way they were stopping it. They're like, that is the shooter. That is the shooter. And it happens with Mac O'Keefe. It happens with Ryan Brown. It happens with a bunch of guys. But I think, you know, the irony of what you're saying is very true, is that you have to get him more touches because he is your leading scorer, because he is your best shooter, because he is, I'll say it, the most consistent guy on the team. I think everyone else is wildly inconsistent. And if you are going to put it together, this is the time to put it together. You have to win this weekend in Frisco.
Frisco, must win weekend, baby. Let's end the podcast with two betting questions. Ooh. One, I'm going to go with player props and going to give you the over in the top value that is given, provided by DraftKings Sportsbook. Starting off with Jeff Teat, over 3.5 points. So I'm going to give you every single, so they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right, so that might be it. Let's do 7 for now. What do you think is the most lock of these? Jeff Teat, 3.5 points. Will Manny, 3.5 points. Brendan Nickturn, 3.5 points. Rambo, 3.5 points. Lyle, 4.5 points. Or Josh Byrne, 3.5 points.
Teat. No thought to it, Teat. I just, even though it was the first one, and I went, what? Teat. Over 3. For sure. For points, yeah, like, right? Not goals, Lyle, just points.
If you're going to give Lyle that treatment of raising it to 4.5, you got to give it to Teat.
100%.
Yeah, like he led in points per game last year as a rookie. All right, team futures. This is what we're looking at right now. According to DraftKings, archers are the favorite at +380. Then whips at 400. Atlas, 425. Chrome, 550. And we'll cap it with water dogs at 550 as well. Who are those? What's the best value? Why would you pick a team future out of this?
Best value is Chrome because they're lower and they have the juice. But I think if you're picking winners, I wouldn't pick the archers, man. Archers got to do it in when it matters. Like, sorry, man. It's been 3 years. You ain't done it. I'm not impressed. Like the bottom line is you have to win. When it counts, like it's great that like that they slash through everybody and they're like a murderous machine on offense. But hey, man, you're getting beat when you need to not be beat, and that's bottom line for me. Like, you know, it's like every other sport. I think people like get so hyped for PLL stuff, and they should. It's great. It's a super high level of lacrosse, super fun to watch, super fun to explain to new fans. It's great. But when are we going to start treating teams that don't win championships and don't win in the playoffs the way they're supposed to be treated in other sports? When does that happen? I want it to happen now. That's what I've been doing for 12, 15 years with the MLL as well. Like, if you don't win, you don't win. I'm not giving you DAP if you get to the semis in an 8-team league. You get no DAP. Win it. Be a dynasty. Be awesome. Be the best. Be transcendental. How many teams can we say that about? The Whips?
It's like Trailer Park Boys, Corey and Trevor, waiting for the DAP. It's the Archers waiting up here for Kyle's DAP.
Yeah. Here we go. Not getting it. You got to win, man. I'm sorry. You just got to win. So I think the Chrome have and again, I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's the complete nature of the team. It's the roles that people are playing. You can see teams that play for each other, and you can see teams that are trying to figure it out. And I think if we're talking about teams that play for each other, I think we go with Chrome and Whips for sure.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I am still rolling with the Whips at +400. It's hard to bet against them. And as Rob Pinnell called out earlier in the podcast, I am wearing my Maryland Club Lacrosse shirt. So it's not the lacrosse shirt. So I remain unbiased as the objective journalist I am. Thank you all for listening to the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Appreciate you all. Appreciate you, Kyle, for joining. Should be a fun weekend.
I love it. I love lacrosse. Love being back. Love talking about it. Have me on anytime. Terry, checks in the mail.
See you guys.